You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lopate. 1 year from this Saturday, the memorial at Ground Zero is scheduled to open. But if you were like me, you probably had no idea what it would look like. One person who most definitely does is documentary filmmaker Steve Rosenbaum. He's been intimately involved in a five-year study of the design, development, and construction of the National 9/11 Memorial and Museum Project. You may have already seen an exclusive preview in this week's New York Magazine. We have a slideshow on our own website, too, at WNYC.org, if you'd like to take a look. But more importantly, I'm really glad that Steve Rosenbaum could join me this morning, this afternoon, here on WNYC, to talk about the entire process and where it stands. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Elliot.
Where were you on 9/11/2001?
So, you know, it's so funny. So many of my conversations with people begin with exactly that question, and everyone has an answer.
Right. So we all remember.
So I was at 28th Street and 5th Avenue. I was in the building of the company that I was then running, a film and television production company. And, you know, we'd always been tangentially in the news business, but had been doing mostly long-form documentaries. And I remember thinking, watching the second plane hit and thinking, this is the moment. And it's now, I guess, you know, it sounds obvious looking back, but this is the moment everything changes.
Just to make full disclosure, you and I met when you were making documentaries for A&E, and I was on air at A&E. You had a film crew on 9/11/2001 right there, right where the towers were hit, right?
So the story is somewhat ironic. I mean, we had prepared that morning to do a film about New York City dog owners, you know, as lighthearted a thing as you could imagine. And so we had four or five camera crews prepared. We had gear. All these people were in the office. And I remember gathering everyone in the conference room and saying, listen, if you need to go home, if you need to be with your family, please go. But if you want to stay, we're going to cover this. And someone raised his hand from the back of the room. It was about 10 people in the room. And said, why? And I said, because we're here. And he said, well, if we go down there, what should we aim the camera at? And I paused for a minute and I said, watch the news crews, see where they're pointing their cameras, and just point your cameras in the opposite direction.
So what was your thinking in that?
I knew there would be no shortage of coverage of the activities, the police activities in the buildings. But as a doc, as a storyteller and a person who loves people, it seemed to me that what was happening on the faces of the crowd and what was happening to New Yorkers was going to be potentially lost in the sands of time. And so very quickly, I wanted to capture the little moments, the granular pieces of the story that I thought I very early said, you know, my children's children will need to see this.
So they ended up training their cameras on the personal stories.
On the sidewalks, on the faces, on Muslim New Yorkers, on cab drivers, on all of us. And in fact, there's a scene in the film that I made, 7 Days in September, in Union Square, which I think, you know, will go down in history as one of these moments when New York could have really been on the edge. It was a crowd of people, and someone had written on the ground, the American flag propagates violence. And people were screaming at each other. And there was a construction worker. It was like out of Central Casting. It was a construction worker with a hard hat and a woman, and they were screaming and yelling. And this construction worker yelled at her, what are we fighting about? And she said, I have no idea. And they ended up in each other's arms with tears streaming down their face. And, you know, really the fact that this city was as strong as it was in those days, I think, is very, very important for what's going to happen next.
Well, I got to see 7 Days in September. It's actually on Hulu. People can see it for free. They can just go online and see the entire movie. And the one aspect of it that really struck me, and maybe that I forgot, sadly enough, is the amount of volunteerism that really came out of that film, the sense of togetherness that people immediately snapped into.
Yeah. The city really was, as a New Yorker, I was just incredibly proud of us. And how we came together. And part of it is, you know, you look around New York and say, what does an American look like? And it looks like a lot of different shapes and sizes and colors and languages. And, you know, that's the thing that I think this anniversary will stir up this year and more next year and more the following year. And why what's being built down there is so extraordinarily important.
Let's get to that, because 7 Days in September is a film that you made about the 9/11 days, obviously immediately after the attacks. How did you – it just seemed natural that you would continue to follow it and want to follow now the 9/11 memorial?
It was the furthest thing from my mind. It was the last story on earth I wanted to cover. In fact, my wife and I who worked together, we talked about the fact that we absolutely did not want to do any more of this. We wanted to go do more, you know, animals and dogs and lighthearted stuff. But, you know, I actually, the story is I was taking my son to a middle school field trip at Ellis Island, and I was on the West Side Highway looking out the bus window, and we passed by the site, and I said to him, when we get to Ellis Island, you're going to have to go with your class. I have to make a phone call. And I called someone I knew at the memorial, at the foundation, and I said, who's making the movie? And they said, what movie? And I said, well, there must be someone documenting what's going to happen on the site. And they said, it's too long a project, and we just haven't had time to think about it. And I said, I need to do it. And, you know, it was, for me, just this calling. And it's been really, and the thing that I'm excited to tell your listeners about is that what's happening down there, you know, we'll talk about some details of it, is really actually quite extraordinary.
There's a profile of you and your efforts in New York Magazine, and there was a recent article in the New York Times as well about how most of us don't think anything is going on down there. Why has the media got it wrong?
So the media has it wrong because as New Yorkers, we're used to looking up. We go to say, what's going on at, you know, corner of 57th and 8th? And we go stand there and we look up. And things go up. The city goes up. And the beauty of the design of both the memorial and the museum is that the thing that will be most startling to people is that what will be in the place of those two footprints above the plaza level is air. And the way I can describe it to your listeners is there's all this talk now about sacred ground, and is this sacred ground, and is two blocks away sacred ground. And to me, the thing that will be most stunning is that above the two footprints of the memorials will be sacred sky. And that will always be sky. There will never be anything where there's built. Now, below it will be these extraordinary pools, which will be the voids in which the largest man-made waterfalls in the United States will move 400 gallons of water a minute over these incredibly beautiful bronze parapets with the names etched in. And the technology around that I'll talk about because it's fascinating. But these are the thing about those buildings were you couldn't tell how big they were if you were standing on one side of them. But when you stand at the edge of this pool and you see the people tiny as, you know, as a thumb on the other side of where these buildings were, you realize just how massive they were. And the design of the memorial at the plaza level, which will open a year from this Saturday, I think will be breathtaking.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lope, talking to Steve Rosenbaum about the 9/11 memorial. People go down there right now. What of the memorial can you see right this minute?
Well, I mean, the truth is very little. It's a construction site. And part of why I think the coverage has been a little hard to understand is that it's a 16-acre site of which there are many, many, many complicated projects going on. There's the transportation hub. There are the Silverstein buildings. There's the two pools. There's the underground museum, which is the other reason why no one can see what's going on, is that the actual museum itself, there will be a glass pavilion with these two magnificent tridents, which are the pieces of the sides of the building that have the pitchfork-shaped design. And then you'll go down this ribbon into the underground space, and the entire museum, which is massive, will be underground. And so there's not a whole lot to see kind of peering up against the construction fence.
But we do hear that you can see where the pools are at this point, and they're starting to move in trees.
Last weekend, they started to move in trees, which I have to say, you know, I mean, I don't work for the memorial, right? So I get to be objective. And when I heard they were moving in trees, my first reaction was it seemed a little bit like it was theater. And I was there actually 2 days ago, standing on the site and looking at the 15 trees that have been planted, and it was really profoundly moving. I was wrong. I mean, seeing life return to those paving stones and starting to see the plaza come together is, you know, it takes your breath away.
So I think the overriding point that we talked about was that most people don't know that it's moving quite a pace, that it is moving, and it's right on schedule.
So with one caveat, I mean, my subjects of my – so I'm making a photo book. I'm writing a narrative history, and I'm making a film, which keeps me a little busy. The one thing that all of my characters consistently say that they're losing sleep over is, you know, there is this thing in construction called winter. And it's the thing that we, you know, it's Mother Nature. It's the thing we don't control. And so, you know, the thing that we all know about construction is that it tends to be impacted by weather. And so the only thing that I think they're concerned about is, you know, will this be a terribly cold winter, and how will that slow down the construction? Because the thing to remember is that in order to plant trees, the first thing they had to do was put a roof. They dug the foundation. They built the museum. Then they put a roof on. And then they're putting in 8 feet of soil and irrigation and lighting. So they're essentially building a natural environment on top of the roof of the museum, and then they're planting the trees. It's a massive project.
You call them characters. Talk to me about the people who were there who were really responsible for making this happen. You've said that they are the right people for the job. Why is that?
So as I started to get into the film, my fear was that given the pressure, the budget pressure and the political pressure and the timing pressure, that this would be kind of, I mean, as much as New Yorkers think that it's taken too long, the truth of the matter is there's never been anything in this country's history in which a memorial about something in recent times has been built this quickly. I mean, think about the Vietnam War Memorial as an example. I mean, so my fear was that they would round the corners, that it would be kind of a gauzy, a patriotic, you know, we fought back kind of flag waving museum. And so I went into this with some trepidation. As I got to know the key makers of this, the thing that was so exciting to me was that each one of them was, as I was drawn to this project because they had to do it. And so Alice Greenwald, who's the executive director of the museum, came from the Holocaust Museum in Washington. She is the most unflaggingly optimistic human being I have ever met. She's managing a massively complex museum project, designing a museum inside a building that doesn't exist yet. So it's not like someone handed her the keys to a building and said, you know, populate it with a story. She has to manage a team that's inventing the story or crafting the story, working with historians, working with scholars, bringing the material together, managing the artifacts, which we'll talk about because they're in and of themselves daunting and emotionally laden. Jan Ramirez, who's the chief curator, literally has in her head the story of every one of these family members, every one of these people who lost their lives and, you know, has more compassion than any human being I've ever met. Joe Daniels, who's the president of the foundation, is this, again, unfailingly upbeat, hard-charging CEO, you know, I mean, they're managing a massive construction project with huge political pressure, and the thing that they're starting to pull together is the right story. I mean, that's what I'm seeing.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate. We're talking about the 9/11 Memorial, planned to open 1 week from Saturday with Steve Rosenbaum. People can not only see a slideshow of the images that Stephen has taken, but read the recent New York Times Magazine article about his efforts on our show page at WNYC.org. Talk to me about what people will see underground, the actual museum itself, what they decided to put in it, what they decided not to put in it.
So the museum first of all, to be clear, there are two projects. There's the memorial pools and there's the museum. The memorial pools will open a year from today. The museum will open a year later or thereabouts. In the museum, it's been broken into three parts, primary exhibition 1, 2, and 3. One is before 9/11. It's the story of the world before, and it's the history of, you know, Islamic extremism and, you know, the previous attacks. And I don't actually know all of the final editorial elements, but it will be the world before 9/11. Primary exhibit 2 is the day of. And, you know, I have seen some of the exhibits, and they're, you know, for someone who thought they'd seen everything, they're breathtaking. And then the last is the primary exhibit 3, which is the world after 9/11. And one of the things that Alice says that I found very moving is that this museum, because of the story they're telling, needs to be a living institution. You know, the story of 9/11 is not going to end the day that they turn the key and open this place. And so there will be changing exhibits and there will be programming and there will be discussion. And I think they're actually really cognizant of how important, you know, the American idea is at this museum. And that's why I think, you know, one of the things that worries me is, will New Yorkers see this as another one of those attractions that the visitors go to, or will we embrace it as our own?
What do you think?
We're a pretty cynical bunch.
You know, the other part of this is that so many visitors, friends of mine who had come to New York, it was obviously on their list for, I think, all the right reasons to want to go see Ground Zero immediately after the attacks and see what was down there. I've never been there.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm alone as a New Yorker. I mean, I know a lot of people did. What will the memorial be like? Do you think it's geared for the tourists, the visitors, or for New Yorkers?
So I think we're going to struggle with this. I mean, first of all, the all of the numbers I've seen say that it will be enormous inflow of visitors for the foreseeable future. I mean, some estimates say as many as 6-8 million a year, which makes it one of the top 10 most visited places on earth. I mean, so already as New Yorkers, we have to think about the fact that the number of people who get on the one and aim toward Rector Street and say, where do I get off? You know, I mean, it's going to be, you know, far easier to access, for example, than Ellis Island. But I think the answer is that New Yorkers, you know, will come to it and will realize that it is our story. It is an American story. It's a global story, but it's also very much a New Yorker story.
How will the hijackers be treated in the museum and the memorial?
So this has been a discussion, and the museum staff is very forthright about it. You know, they're making a piece of around history, and these people did something, and to not say their names would be inappropriate. That said, though, they've been very careful to not honor them, and so the last version, and again, these will change over time, but the last version that was being discussed was, I think, either surveillance pictures or mugshots or passport pictures that would be relatively small and modest. I mean, they're not going to be glamorized or glorified, but you know, there's no doubt that their names and their story will be part of the museum, because what they did, you know, is why this happened. They did that.
And the victims themselves, these kinds of memorials tend to have walls with names. Will this have a similar place?
So two different memorials. The around the pools will be these extraordinarily beautiful brass etched parapets, which will have the names of all of the victims. And, you know, one little known fact is that one of the things that they realized was that in the winter, they didn't want these covered with ice and snow. And in the summer, these brass sitting in the hot sun, they didn't want them to be hot to the touch. And so they will have, I think, the first of its kind heating and cooling elements built into them, so that they will be clear in the winter and cool to the touch in the summer, which is
extremely thoughtful.
Yeah, well, you know, essential, but a little surprising. Within the memorial itself, within the museum itself, there will be exhibits of all of the victims, and there will be a story of each one of them, and there will be images and an entire room dedicated to that.
In the September 13th issue of New York Magazine, there's over a dozen photographs that you took, and this is primarily artifacts. What are the artifacts, and where did you shoot these?
So, you know, again, credit to New Yorkers and their ability to see the future. Very early on, as they began to do the cleanup process, they realized that there were going to be elements of the recovery that needed to be saved. And so they began to take these enormous pieces of steel and stone and a piece of the antenna and a path subway car and a crushed fire truck and all of this material, almost without knowing what the museum would be yet. And they brought it all out to Hangar 17 at JFK, which was an abandoned airplane hangar. And they very carefully cataloged and organized this. And when you walk into the hangar, you take a minute and it just takes your breath away, because, you know, you think you're on the set of a disaster movie. Massive, twisted steel and everything with the word SAVE spray painted on the side, because, you know, it was done relatively quickly.
And why the decision on some and not others? Why would they save this ambulance or that beam? Who made those decisions?
So, you know, that's a good question. I don't entirely know the answer, but I will before the film is finished. It was, you know, from the Port Authority and people that were managing the recovery effort. The other thing, though, that I think that over time has been challenging is, so now you have all this material and not all of it fits in the museum.
I was going to say, you've got the entire trains.
Yeah.
Subway trains are in this and huge. So how much of it will go?
So if you look at the magazine...
And we're going to put this on our website at WNYC.org as well.
The fire truck is already prepared to move back. Part of what they need to do is what they call the large artifacts will, over the next couple of weeks, be brought back by flatbed truck and then lowered into the museum, because they're, you know, these are 70-ton artifacts. There's no elevator known to man that can manage these things. So they literally have to be hoisted in by crane before the final ceiling can be put on, before the roof can be sealed. And so you'll see the antenna, the large piece of the antenna from World Trade 2 will go in. one of the fire trucks, a couple of other large pieces, the tridents that started to go in yesterday, and they're important. They're important. They're not any more important than the small artifacts, which in some ways are more emotional. I mean, the pieces of clothing or the driver's license, and the job of the Memorial Museum is to tell is first of all to protect these things, make sure that they're all carefully cataloged, prepare the exhibits, but make sure the stories are kept as well.
You have a pretty successful day job, and this is something you're doing out of your own pocket and out of passion. Why are you doing this?
So I don't know is maybe the honest answer. I mean, when I started gathering the material for the first film, I kept waiting for somebody that was in the archive business to show up and say, son, you know, we're the professionals.
We have it covered.
We have it covered. Thanks for, you know, getting it started. What I realized here was that the story of how this thing comes together really matters. Because when you walk into this building, you're going to have all kinds of questions. Why is that fire truck there and not the ambulance? You know, why did that photograph get chosen? I'll give you a wonderful example. There was a meeting I was in the other day in which they were talking about the projections of the faces of the victims. And one of the challenges was, how do we project these in such a way that they don't reflect? And I couldn't understand what they were talking about. And finally, what I realized was their concern was that if they reflected off the screen, they might reflect on the floor and someone might step on the images. Well, how beautiful is it that when you walk into the museum, none of those, that will never happen because somebody thought about that level of detail. And so I think the film needed to be made and the book needed to be written in part so that people understand that what's being made there is a series of very complex choices.
And some of the photographs and the videos that you've been taking at the memorial as part of the construction will actually be part of the museum itself as well?
So part of my arrangement with them is that everything that I do, I will donate the educational rights to their collection. Because, you know, again, if you're enough of a student of history, what we understand is that 20 years hence, 50 years hence, 100 years hence, people will say, wait a minute, how did that get there? Who were those people? And how did they make those decisions? And so I presume that there will be material in my raw footage. I've already shot 140 hours as of today that I don't find even remotely interesting and maybe won't even make it into the finished film, but that historians will look back and say, no, we need to know that.
And how many images still images have you shot?
About 8,000.
Where will you be this Saturday?
So every year I try and convince myself that I should not be, that I don't need to be at the site. And every year I end up at the site. Last year it rained and it was incredibly sad. This year I'm hoping we'll have, you know, a clear sky. I'll be there all day and I'll take some pictures and I'll talk to some people, but it's just mostly where I feel drawn to.
And once the memorial and the plaza are open, what will you do next?
You know, this isn't something, you know, again, it's like saying to a painter, what will you paint next? I mean, I'm making the story because it felt like it needed to be made. And by the way, it's a long, I mean, you know, when I spoke to my, you know, partners or my friends about, you know, why I would want to make a photo book, you know, write a book and then also make a film, they said, why don't you pick one? And I said, because it's a story that requires all three medium in order to be accurate. I mean, I've got some chunk of time to work on this.
My guest has been Steven Rosenbaum, whose work documenting the construction of the 9/11 Memorial is profiled in this week's issue of New York Magazine. A slideshow of his photographs is available on our website at WNYC.org, along with a link to the article. Steven, I want to thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much.